This is Kauai Soapbox Live.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. It's really great. This is Felicia in the studio, and this is going to be a show that's great for the listeners to call in at 826-7771 and off-island toll-free 866-275-1112. It's always fun to hear from people from all over the place. We have folks from Martinez, California, Lincoln, Illinois, Sacramento, California, Tucson, Arizona, Chicago, Illinois, all over, Santa Rosa, Tokyo, several Japan. It's a lot of fun when we see how much everybody's listening in different places, even Nova Scotia. So, hello, Nova Scotia. So, many things going on today. I have been going to more meetings, always trying really hard to do a good job with this public affairs show. We definitely want to know what your opinion is on all of the different issues that are coming forward. I have the paper in front of me here, too. Again, they're speaking about the KIUC special election that begins on January 3rd, and you might think, you know, what's one more little thing like that? And it does cost some money to do it. I went to the meeting again today, and I think the thing, you know, the big deal is it's just about whether we have a cooperative or not. I heard Yaw make a couple of comments that I had to agree with. When you look at the costs that happen when they put in $40 million worth of infrastructure here, $3 million there, you know, lots of different costs. When they single out one job position and decide to set that on punitively on the people who did not take the smart meters, I have a little bit of trouble with that. I personally am voting no in that special election. I went in there today kind of hoping that they would just put the comparison on what the costs are. It is about $10 a month for people who have a smart meter. And for me, I can afford that $10 a month, and I will. But if it was spread out over everybody, it's about $1 a month. And I think that it's really worthwhile to just do that so that we don't have a lot of, you know, stress in the community and have to sit there and think about these smaller, I don't want to call it a small issue because it's not small for the people who have a serious health concern. So that is an issue, but these ballots are going to be coming out January 3rd, and today's meeting was about, one of the things was about the wording on it. So that was one element, but there was actually quite a few issues that came up in the meeting. So I'm going to share a few more of them out. One kind of big one is about the Anahola solar facility. If you have an opinion on it one way or another, that would be great. We did have Kaipo, Kaylee, hold on, what am I saying? We had a statement in there about why, from the people who would like to see it happen. From the people who would like to see that happen, they have the Anahola Homestead Leases and Waitlist Beneficiaries of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. They have a big printout that has a lot of information in it for people to think about. And this is a big deal. I think one of the biggest elements of it is that it's on the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. Other than that, I don't know that there would be any contention regarding it. It's going to provide a lot of jobs and a lot of power. It's, let me see, 55 acres with 12 megawatts of the power. So that's like 5% of Kauai Island usage, or, you know, 4,000 residents. So the cost is about $56 million, and it will bring in construction 75 to 100 full-time positions. So those are some positives. The downside is that it's on the Hawaiian homeland's land. And I think KIUC, if they're not building it here, they need to build it somewhere else. So if you have an opinion on that, please feel free to call it in. And if you would like to come in, please feel free to come in, too. It's kind of fun. Today, I had a last moment. Something came up for everybody who was going to be on the show with me. So you have me alone in the house. So it's a great call-in show. Other things that did happen at KIUC, David Iha was elected to replace Dennis Asaki for the national element of this. It's the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. Other thing that came out that I thought was pretty interesting here is that there's 1,850 new PV applications. So this is a big deal for the power company, and many people might think, all right, well, we've thought enough about power, but we actually have to support our power plant, our power cooperative, and figure out how we're going to manage the changes that are around the bend. There's going to be a lot of solar, and when people are on solar, they don't have to stay connected to the grid. My understanding, and please, Aka, my listener, call in and correct me if I'm wrong, that the military base and I believe it's the Hyatt, I'm not sure, one of the big hotels is actually going off the grid. So then the grid system, just the distribution of power becomes a big expense. And each year, we actually are doing a good job saving more and more energy. So there's a big challenge for them as more point source generation happens, that they're not actually able to charge for the power. I know that I produce definitely way over half of my energy, and it is pushing power onto the grid all day long, but at night I utilize theirs. Another thing that did happen is Jim Mayfield, who is one of the people who started KIUC, he was in the very startup group as buying it as a cooperative. He asked if they would consider increasing the ballot initiative from 250 signatures to 10% of the membership, which would be about 3,000. So that is about a 12-fold increase in what it takes to be able to challenge what the administration chooses to do. So it makes it much harder to turn around a judgment that the board has. And, you know, if people do have frivolous concerns, then that is challenging, because it's like this, as was put out, a $63,000 event for them to do this and to put the ballot out. But if they need 10%. It's very difficult to get signatures on these ballots when you need to get 250 on to sign a petition to put something on the ballot. You have to also have somebody's account number at KIUC. So when people are walking around and trying to get signatures, most people don't remember their account number off the top of their head. So their signature doesn't work very easily at that level. So that's one element. We're going to be honoring a few of our friends in a few minutes, too, who have left this life, very sadly. A couple more unexpected deaths. Very, very sad about that. And but for right now, I was going to play a song called I Know I'm Not Alone, So I Want You to Call In. This is Michael Franti, who is singing that he knows he is not alone.
Sun, you
And that was Michael Franti. I know I'm not alone. And so right now I have a caller on the air. Thank you so much for holding.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. I called in about basically two issues. You mentioned photovoltaic in Anahola versus, and you asked for what is our opinion, and I feel that decision should default to the residents of that area. But I would suggest that since their primary concern is housing, that a way of getting the photovoltaic generation and housing is to put photovoltaic on top of the housing. I think that that would be a win-win. Another way is that we can be generating electricity in the Anahola area. Because my recollection is I did a county, and it may have been KIUC, commissioned a report back in around 2005 to determine what are the alternatives for alternative energy and what's most promising. So they looked at wind, and they said, where is it windiest? And it is windiest on the northeastern shore and on the ridges. And so it happened that one primary would be Kwai Kai. Yeah. And I thought, wouldn't that be wonderful to put some wind jennies up on Kwai Kai? Anyway, another location could be in the Anahola Homestead area, Homelands area, and perhaps even Kanui Kapono Charter School's campus. I'm talking about wind generation, but I'm not talking about endangering birds.
Yeah, you have to have the certain kind of, like a vertical twist windmill to not hit the birds.
Yes. There's a vertical access wind generator. It's not a windmill. We're not milling anything. The wind jenny. And it's a vertical access thing with huge funnels, which down into a vortex. I recently submitted this to Brad Rockwell. He is the physical engineer or the professional engineer for KIUC, and I copied the entire board. This is the one that I showed them heretofore is unknown and looks promising, and Brad said that he would look into it and hope that there would be a commercial application. He also said that they were waiting on someone with a viable wind proposal to come forward with such a proposal. That could happen. That could happen with the school. That could happen with companies contracting to do it on the homeland. In any case, these are areas, these are ideas that are up for discussion. And the second thing I called about was this proposal put proposals before the membership of KIUC, the 10% versus the 250. Clearly, this is an effort to stifle dissent, and that simply isn't possible in a cooperative.
It makes it difficult, too, because when the issues of contention come up, then all of a sudden everything gets looked at. It's like having a family fight. So it seems like they could, you know, just kind of spread that around in a way that is not even a noticeable amount. I know if there was a need or an expense that I wasn't directly benefiting by, but, you know, it was helping another area and it was costing me a dollar a month or $1.50 a month, I would be fine with that.
Well, that isn't the case. As Adam Aspas pointed out, the more people who opt out, the more people who say, all right, I'm caving into this, and I don't want to spend the $10.27, and that puts a greater burden on those who wish to opt out on the smart meter.
Well, I think that's how the fee is designed. It's designed to create pressure to cause people to opt in to the smart meter.
I agree.
I think that's pretty evident.
Yeah.
I don't even think that it is, that there's a pretense that it is something other than that.
I agree, and I hope your listening audience is aware that the board of KIUC, in response to the request for a vote on this, crafted language which, once again, skews the whole thing in the language of the ballot itself, and that's exactly what they did with FERC. And it seems to me they are simply as disreputable now as they were then. And that really isn't surprising because the same people who are up for re-election were in power at the time. So my request is for the membership to take a very hard look at who is up for re-election and to get the bums out. And that's my last word on that.
Okay. Well, I will say that, like, the challenge with doing things like the wind and the water, the water's been shut down with the FERC closing, you know, of that permit. Like, it keeps them from being able to have somebody else put in a permit for that for 5 years. It's a tight game, you know, the way everything is structured. It favors certain businesses a whole lot more than others. It's not like a really free market system. It is a favored market system. So it's hard doing all these things. And go ahead.
Felicia, I'm just wondering, what do you suppose, based on your experience, would be the probability of returning the water that was taken from the North Shore, return it to the North Shore, in view of the laws and the politics today?
What would be the impact of returning the water to its original Ahupua'a?
No, not the impact. What is the probability of that happening, say, within the next 5 years?
For the water, I would say very light, very little, almost none. I think that when we see where big areas of water has been re-diverted, like particularly the Wailua River, like the North Fork of the Wailua River, that pretty much has all been redirected towards Puna and the plains over there. I think it goes through the Kapaya plant and then down, gets reverted down and comes out over Wailua Falls there. I mean, it's interesting to see all the water diversions that happen. I mean, we all benefit from them. The challenge is that most of us aren't paying attention. And then when we finally pay attention, then we'll think, huh, is this Pono? Is this right? I mean, we need to just perhaps really take a strong look at all of it, especially as we have resource depletion becoming more and more significant.
Yes.
We are going to be having a show. I'm going to be doing that with Jonathan Jay. Close, I think on the 27th of December with a filmmaker on hemp. But that's a very thirsty plant, too. You know, if they were growing hemp on the west side, they would still need all that water that's being redirected. I mean, it's none of it's easy. It's all pretty difficult, and we all need to sit there and look at these different elements and issues that are happening.
Well, I agree with you, and I would suspect that the general population on Kauai would support the growing of hemp to restore the soils, and therefore would support the use of water for that purpose.
You know, I think that that's definitely a possibility, but it gives you know, accuracy when then a certain industry will say, well, this is really more about just targeting our industry than it is about our impacts. That is a common, you know, foul cry that does come out on these issues.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there are listeners who wish to get in on this conversation, so I'll sign off.
Okay. But thank you so much for calling in.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye. So another thing that I was seeing here that was an interesting movement forward is this is at a national level. A judge has ruled against the National Security Administration's data collection. So it said a federal district judge ruled Monday that the National Security Agency program that is systematically keeping records of all Americans' phone calls most likely violates the Constitution, describing its technology as almost Orwellian and suggesting that James Madison would be aghast to learn that the government was encroaching on liberty in such a way. This is Judge Richard J. Leon of the District of Columbia. And he ordered the government to stop collecting data on the personal calls of the two plaintiffs in the case and to destroy the records of their calling history. This judge was appointed by President George Bush, and we'll see how things move on that. But that is definitely, a step more towards reclaiming some of our freedom. It says the case is the first in which a federal judge who is not on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which authorized the once secret program, has examined the bulk data collection on behalf of someone who is not a criminal defendant. Because most of this stuff hasn't even really been looked at. So those are challenges, big challenges that we have. And when I was reading another article that looked like a pretty credible source, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but how when you sign, and so I did go in and look on the Privacy Act on at least the smartphone that was an iPod, and I mean an iPhone. When you upgrade to different apps, it is giving authorization basically for an eavesdrop right onto the phone mic. It's not even the phone calls. Like, you can no longer, and this is by a federal law, they no longer have batteries that can be taken out of the phones. It used to be you can pull your battery out. And when you pull your battery out of the phone, it's completely off. It can't hear, it can't listen. But when the battery's in, it's always tracking you. It's like a GPS of where you are. And they can listen through on the mics. So it's like, I have an old phone that I can take my battery out. So that's a good thing. But so it was nice to see that a judge actually ruled to support that. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL in Haleiwa. We're going to hear the county council report for what's coming up.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of December 16th. There will be a special council meeting Tuesday at 9 a.m. and a regular meeting at 9 a.m. on Wednesday. The meetings will be in the council chambers at the historic county building in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agendas. The special meeting has one agenda item. It is a request from Council Chair Fafaro for the County Auditor, Director of Finance, and representatives from N&K CPAs Incorporated to discuss the comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2013. Here are some highlights from the regular meeting agenda on Wednesday. Councilmember Yukimura transmits for council consideration a proposal to establish a new article of the county code to address regulations and restrictions related to the excessive barking of dogs while balancing the rights and privileges of dog owners with the rights and privileges of other citizens of the county. This is Draft Bill 2516. She also transmits a proposal to establish a new county code article relating to cat licenses. This is proposed draft bill 2517, and these bills are also under bills for the first reading. The mayor requests agenda time to provide the council with a brief presentation on the administration's efforts to implement Ordinance 960, that's bill number 2491, draft 2, relating to pesticides and genetically modified organisms. The county attorney requests approval to spend up to $20,000 for special counsel's continued services for civil suits. The deputy county clerk transmits a claim against the county by Ernesto G. Passion for attorney's fees and medical bills pursuant to the county charter. The planning committee is reporting on the bill to repeal ordinance number 716 related to standards, permits, and fees for work on buildings, structures, and property damaged by Hurricane Iniki. And this was approved as amended. This is related to the reconstruction of Cocoa Palms and is also under bills for the second reading. Public Works Parks and Recreation Committee Chair Kagawa requests the presence of the Director of Parks and Recreation to provide an update on all concession contracts' monthly revenues thus far for fiscal year 2013-2014, and this was received for the record. Councilmember Raposo requests agenda time to discuss the transit accommodation tax and general excise tax in preparation for the Hawaii State Association of Counties Executive Committee meeting. This was received for the record. The Finance and Economic Development, Tourism, Vista Industry, Small Business Development, Sports and Recreation Development, and other Economic Development Areas Committee has on their agenda several funding and fiscal items, including funding related to the Kauai Humane Society, which was approved. The Committee of the Whole has on their agenda a resolution to implement an environmental and public health impact study via formation of a pesticide and genetic engineering joint fact-finding group. There will be a lengthy executive session not open to the public. Subjects include five legal matters and the request by the county attorney to provide a briefing in the civil case of the county auditor Ernest Passion versus the county and Jay Fafaro et al. The council is not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m. It will recess for public hearings on Bill 2512, a bill for an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2013 through June 30, 2014, revising amounts estimated in the general fund. And that's the Office of the County Attorney for Special Counsel, $95,053. After the public hearings, the council will reconvene to complete any unfinished business. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
Well, I think that there's a lot of really important things that they're talking about there, and I think that sometimes when people don't pay enough attention to some of them, like the dog issues and the cat issues, it's really a pretty big deal. It's important to not have your dog barking hard and bothering the neighbors. I know I have a little Yip Yip dog, and I have to bring him in at night, otherwise, and he's an outdoor dog, he's going to be really hard on my neighbors. You know, there's this balance. You know, do we live in a sanitized world where there are no animals? But when they're talking about licensing cats too, really what all this stuff is a tax and a fee. And so we have to look at what we want, what we need. I saw in the paper, I think it was yesterday, about somebody fined and charged for allowing their dog to basically starve to death in the yard. You know, there's the extremes. Animal rescue is really important. It costs money to do the animal rescue. We've got a very beautiful humane society. The one before that, that used to be out at Salt Pond, was pretty rough to even go to. It was so underfunded. And I think that this $500 fine is what they charge you now if your animal is somehow off a leash. And that's an incredible fine, you know, especially in a community that used to really be one where dogs were very much a part of our world here and what people are involved in and, you know, how they lived, you know, and how they still do live. So it's, again, it feels like an encroachment of a lifestyle. It's an encroachment on a species. It's interesting how dogs are separated out as something that their waste is somehow worse than any of the other waste. So, you know, it's a very difficult kind, and it's actually it steps on the culture of what has traditionally been here. And even when they penalize people for not having a neutered dog or a spayed dog, because some people are raising their dogs as a breed for hunting. So that's a very important element too. So if you have a couple dogs and they get out of the fence, it's $1,000. You know, it's the difference between being okay and not being okay. And so it's something that I wonder what the listeners think and feel about that. I'd like to also, when I'm thinking about dogs and who all has dogs, I'm reminded of a very dear friend of mine, Lee Haumea, also known as Harvey. People call him Harvey. He's 31, from Wainiha, more recently been living in California with his dear brother, Keone. And he passed away this week, and he's a good friend of mine. I'm very, very sad to see that. He's also in the family of the Ham Youngs. His grandmother is a Thai hook, really. The Ham Youngs is Kathy Ham Young married, so Kathy Ham Young would be his auntie. And, you know, there's all the aunties and uncles, and they raise all these kids. So there's so many people who have raised a person like Lee. And so he's got nine. He's one of nine brothers and sisters. And I would just kind of want to acknowledge all of his family that is gone. And I've known most of them since they were pretty little. So in that Haumea family, Kehau is his mother, and then Al Saramur is his father. But he has many brothers and sisters. That's Kaimana Haumea, Keoni Haumea, Makana Haumea. Then there's Lee, who just passed. Then Sina Saramur, Kapena Haumea. Sina's a great surfer, by the way. Kapena Haumea, Racy, and Michael Haumea, and then finally Kamalani Haumea. I've seen most of these people all born from Wainiha. Lots of love out to the family. I might later play a song that is something that he would really like, and really want to acknowledge him. And so for his service, his celebration of life is going to have the first one. His grandmother's going to California. That's Lady. So it will be this Saturday, December 21st at 1:30 sharp at the Capo Beach Church in Dana Point. There's some people listening from California right now, so letting them know it's this Saturday. And then there will be a service here for him, and that will be on January 18th at Waipa. So a few Saturdays out into January, and we will have him honored and loved, and it's really pretty heavy, hard change to have happen. So we're going to cut to another song right now.
Even Woodstockers don't need a passport, just send a postcard. Send me a message, let me know how you are. Whether you are walking or driving in your car, throw your hands high, tell me who you are. Say hello, hello,
hello, hello,
bonjour, bonjour.
Another Michael Fronte calling in, and coming in on the radio. So I have had some people asking. I have a listener asking a question, and that is, if anybody knows if the pay-as-you-go phones, if those track also. I would have to imagine that they do. It's just that when you're paying for it, it's not as tracked as who's purchasing it, I would think, but I don't particularly know. I know that it is very, very difficult to do anything anymore where you are not constantly monitored for every action, everything that you do. Buying food at the grocery store is tracked. Every time you get money out of the machine, it's tracked. Often now there is the capacity for them to know where the cash came from and where it moved out of the bank and then at least its first purchase. I don't know how much everywhere is looking at that, but there is a consistent, what's called your metadata from your phone. And I turned in on my phones twice. You have to call it in. You have to look at the fine print on a document that you get when you first get it. But it says they have the capacity or the desire to sell your metadata, your activity. And unless you call in and deny that, it's all open for sale. So who cares about that is really different marketing agents. They basically know where you go, when you go, because your cell phone is essentially a homing device. And that is also a concern that people have over these smart meters. It is able to sell your data, and the power company can sell your data if they want to. Right now they're saying they don't want to, but the metadata of what's being used when. And so they can tell when you're home, when you're not home for the most part. From the raw data, I think that that's not their intention. They seem to be very sensitive about even that being asserted. But it is something that's utilized in all different kinds of places. And so when people need a number of different contribution sources or profit centers, especially as less people are using power and more people are making their own power, that tends to be a common use in different communities that are at right now, is selling the data and the habits of the people who are online. Then they would also know, like, when you're home, if you're a telemarketer, that kind of thing. So many people are sensitive to these types of issues. This is Felicia on Kauai Soapbox Live at KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And what Kauai Soapbox Live is really designed to be is a format for citizens and people to be able to share their mana'o, their ideas, their concerns. It tends to be a show focused on concerns in the community. We do have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello, is this Felicia?
It is, and you are live on the air with me.
Oh, thanks. Hope you guys are doing well. The whole spying thing, to me, there's two sides of every argument, but when you get right down to it, when AT&T was the first company to actually start doing this with smartphones, even before the iPhone, and they released information to the public saying that they were never going to sell it. They were just using it for their own, benefit. And companies are always going to say that. They're, even KIUC, they're going to say initially, well, yeah, we have the capacity to do this or the ability to do this. That doesn't mean at the co-op down the road, the decision makers change. So the point is, once you allow these entities to start taking in your data, there really is no going back. They have the power. And if we know anything about PIUC, we know that they're not always forthcoming with their information. I'm not saying that they directly lie to the public, but smart meters are a perfect example. This is before they even thought about making a decision on the smart meters. And you can make an argument either way on there's good arguments on both sides, but before they even thought about making a decision, this should have been up for a serious public debate. And what they were trying to do with, hydropower or whatever, up by the homestead, I mean, they never let the people know before they actually brought that firm in from, I think, Sweden or someplace in Europe and paid them $1 million to do a study. And that's what these companies do and these entities do. They say that they're not going to do it, but then once they have the capacity to do it, it's there. It's, ball game over. So I think I've been with Verizon for a long, long time, and they used to be a really good company, and now they are one of the worst companies in the world in terms of spying on you, just like Facebook. And we all love Facebook. Facebook's great, but, I mean, basically you're giving the government and other entities an open book on what you do day to day. And, it's a little scary, but that's really all I have to say.
Did you call Verizon and have them decline being able to sell your metadata?
I did. There was a Facebook post, I think started by you, actually, because we're friends on Facebook. I think you started one about this time last year.
Yeah, when I got it, then I put it out there. I went, wow, lucky thing I opened my mail right there. It looked like a sales piece.
For me is that when I called and, got off of that list, whatever it is, a couple of months later, I got curious because I saw another article that someone else posted on Facebook, and I called in, and they said that I never had called in before. And it occurred to me that I really had no evidence that I had called in before and declined to allow them to sell the ability to sell my data. And, when you're dealing with customer service in these companies, yeah, they're recording the call, but, I mean, you don't have any proof that you called.
Yeah, I think it's really important to
KIUC, not to cut you off, but KIUC actually did the same exact thing. I signed up to get off, have my smart meter replaced by an analog meter, and I was working with Jay. He actually gave me some really good contacts at KIUC,
I called. This was 2.5 months ago, and they still haven't come out. And I called again last week, and they said that I never said anything in, even though I had email evidence and everything. But I think that's how they play those games, and they're always going to, depend on you to get frustrated and just give up.
So when you called back in, did they? I think what you have to do is get some sort of a confirmation number.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what ultimately saved me, because the second or third lady that I talked to actually demanded a confirmation number. She gave it to me. It just didn't go anywhere.
So they still haven't removed your smart meter?
They still haven't. I haven't really gotten a good answer. I was told that initially that they didn't have enough working meters, I guess. I didn't really get a good answer on it. But last time I checked, that I was still on the list for them to come out and do it. But
It's tough. I know that I was looking at some history on elements like this. And when the tractors first came out, like John Deere tractors, they gave people a really, really good deal. And they sold them their first tractor for almost nothing with a trade-in on their horse or their oxen. If they brought the livestock in, then they got a very, very good deal on their first mechanical plow, their gasoline-powered plow. And then you become dependent on the new technology, and you can't put the tractor in the barn and have it lay a new tractor for the next season. They don't breed. And so as you lose your horses and that stock even moves away, we can be beguiled into giving up our privacy and our freedom. And
right.
I think that the phones and, like, I went to a workshop on a really cool element. It's the Google Apps for Education, and there's so many good aspects to it. So people, you'd get all your schoolwork on there, K through 13 or further, but anybody then can see it, right? You leave a trail of all your learning, your process, your growth, everything. Everything becomes essentially, I don't know about public property, but it becomes marketable property. It all gets connected together. And so here's this really great product that's free, I'm sure has tremendous value, and yet it leaves me with a slightly nervous feeling. And you brought something up about lacking trust. And I think what happens is people lose their credibility, or corporations or governments lose their credibility. And so I hope that when this ballot comes out, that the wording is good, so that it actually strengthens people's faith in the company and doesn't be one more thing to make everybody suspicious of every choice that the power cooperative makes.
Yeah. And I think... we have to ask ourselves, how did we get to the point where, we are allowing these, it's not even just the government, we're allowing all these corporations to spy on us. And the government has done a really good job trying to convince the American people that they need this information for fighting terrorism, which is, completely ridiculous. And, a large part of the population has bought into it. And, there's, when you get right down to it, we're losing our freedoms. From the Patriot Act all the way up to, what Obama's doing now, it's, without getting too political, it really transcends, political boundaries. It doesn't matter if you're, right or left, they're all the same. They're all doing the same thing. And, we really have to be, aware of what's going on, because, it's one thing to give up a little bit of your freedoms for safety, but when it's coming in chunks, little bitty chunks every year, if you add it all up, you're losing one heck of a lot.
And I think that what happens is that they're smart about how they do it. Like when the National ID Act came out, everybody had a fit, No. And I think if it had come out, it was supposed to come out something like May of 2008. They could do that, and then everybody says no. Everybody gives pushback, and it doesn't happen, and they would have trouble with it. But what they did, because there was such an outrage, is they just slid it in to be an aspect of the driver's license. And then so as people renew their driver's licenses, then they make that transition. And so you never have a day that everybody says no. And so when it's a funnel in and a slow process, the people who say no then just lose what is now being called your privilege to travel.
Right. Well, and you, what you talked about, one of the agenda items for the county council meeting coming up is cop licenses. And, you know, on the surface, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, who cares about that? But, you know, in reality, that's a pretty big deal. And you're losing a lot of freedoms. If they say you have to license your cat, I mean, if you think about what that really means is that, you know, eventually they can go out and anybody who doesn't have a cat that's licensed, you know, they can, you know, potentially take it from you. And that's a loss of a freedom, you know, to have to have a license to own an animal or to have possession of an animal. That's ridiculous.
Well, things are happening. I'm hearing these stories, so it didn't happen to me, this particular one. But I get constant people call me and tell me their stories of what goes on. And so one person who is really without a house had her dog in the back of her truck, and that's where they basically live. And so the truck was parked someplace, so her dog was taken at night. Well, she just walked away from it for a very short moment and was taken out of the back of the truck and taken to the Humane Society, and then she couldn't basically bust him out of jail without a $500 payment to get him out, and she didn't have that $500, and so she exceeded the limit. I don't know if it was like 10 days. It was like less than 2 weeks, and they euthanized the dog. So
yeah.
Sometimes when people are without a home, that's their family. Even when you have a home, that's part of your family. So it felt like kidnapping and murder to her.
Yeah, absolutely. I think many people would feel that way, that you know, if somebody took my dog or cat, and I would be pretty enraged. So yeah,
and like a cat, it's interesting too, like cats right now are sort of free to roam anywhere, and I will acknowledge that they are a problem with the endangered birds. So what can be right behind that is that if you have a cat that is tagged and it gets out of your yard, which is the nature of a cat. And then if they start charging people $500 for the cat out of the yard, you know, or forcing the cats to live in the house, that's another big challenge. What happens is that only people who are wealthy can have pets. And even so, it's almost that way because it's hard to rent a place with either a child or an animal. And
well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop there. You can't go camping on Poly Holly without, you know, getting a permit. And I live in Hawaii, and I have five cats that all live outside on 2 acres. And, you know, I'm not going to be having these cats inside. They're outdoor cats. And if I didn't have them, and there's a lot of people that have cats around here, this valley would be overrun with rats and mice. And sometimes I don't think people realize the mice and rat problem that we would have
without the cats.
Without the cats. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess you can make a case for toxoplasmosis or whatever, but they're not the only animal to carry that. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe rats carry them as well, carry that, well, I don't even know what it is. Is it a bacteria or whatever? But they're not the only cat or only animal on this island that carries that. So, you know, I don't think this place is overrun with feral cats like people like to pretend it is. But anyway, I hope you guys have a good day and good show, Felicia.
Okay, thank you so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox Live with Felicia. I have a caller with a quick response about the mice and the cats. Are you there? Thank you for holding. Aloha. Oops.
Are Land you and Natural Resources came to... Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. They came over to this place I was hanging out at over at Mahalapu, and there's some... They're putting signs out to make sure that the people kept their dogs on a leash and everything, and they're talking about the cat problem and even coming down and hiring people to come over to Mahalapu and shoot the feral cats. And I asked him, I said, well, what about the rats? He says, yeah, well, the rats are a really big deal. He says, the rats will come into where they nest and chew them up. And the rats are probably the biggest problem that we have out here. I said, well, why do you want to go and kill the cats? The cats are the ones that eat the rats. He said, yeah, well, I know, but, you know, that's the way they want to do it.
Yeah.
So the cats actually save the invasive, you know, or the indigenous species here. The rats are what kill them.
Well, they probably both are somewhat problematic, but the situation might be worse without the cats.
Do you remember when they used to burn the sugar cane, how many rats would come into town?
Yes, I do.
And, oh, my God. And so now there's no more burning of the sugar cane, so all those rats are living out there. We need the cats, in my opinion. And I'm just one guy, but I think we need to have cats. And without them, we would be inundated. I've been through places in Europe and places in Mexico and Central America, where, and even in the Virgin Islands, the couple of places there, that the rats were just everywhere, and they would destroy things. If people didn't have cats, the breeding factor is exponential.
That is accurate, and I know my cats tend to get about a mouse or two or three a week in my yard. So I agree with that. So thank you so much for calling.
That's all I wanted to say. Aloha. Thank you very much for your show. I love you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Aloha. You're on the air.
Is it my now?
Yes, it is.
Hey, right on, Felicia. I just want to send out my condolences to the Malwiki family from Uncle Bernard's passing this past time, and then the Ham Young family for, it just seems like every other weekend I get one funeral to go to.
Yes, at least. But, and I know I'm not sure if the family's really ready to release the name, but a neighbor of mine around the corner passed away last night. Last night.
On a positive note, I just wanted to say that how lucky we all are to live Kauai, and cats are beautiful, dogs are beautiful, rats are beautiful, and if the barges stop coming, then all these animals are going to be cow-cow for us.
That's right. I mean, really, even mice you could, I'm sure,
eat. Yeah.
Did you go to Uncle Bernie's service?
I never had because I was working that day.
Mm-hmm.
But
I saw pictures.
It was represented well. I seen on Facebook. And,
yeah.
And I don't know. I just too much good friends have passed away lately. So.
Mm-hmm. I know. It just seems endless. It might be that we live in a community where everybody knows each other and everybody loves each other, and
isn't that a good thing?
It is a good thing, and like Uncle Bernie, he knew so many people because he had so much to do with our waste disposal and moving from the landfill in Princeville over into having the transfer station, and he's the very big man with the very big smile who's always helpful, right?
And
who, there,
who
Princeville
else,
Transfer.
Who else is going to keep the chicken fight in check,
I don't know.
Felicia.
Okay,
love
aloha.
You.
Thank you. So you are listening to KKCR, and so Kauai Soapbox Live is a call-in show, and today it's really extra appreciated your calls in, because I am in here on my own. We had some guests planned, but something came up for them. I think I will play you a song by... Oops, I got another caller, so hang on. Aloha, you are on the air.
Felicia, this is Stephanie.
Oh, hi. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, but we'd like to hear again what you said first about Bobo.
Well, I acknowledged, you know, how wonderful Bobo is and how much he has given to our whole community. I think he's a reflection. I was right then just speaking about Uncle Bernie Mahuiki.
Yes, that's my daughter's uncle.
Yeah, so, I mean, your family has taken so many really huge hits with your Auntie Kathy. She's my good friend. I say Kathy Kalehua Tai Hook Ham Young Pfeffer and get every little piece of her life in there. But, so, yes, Bobo's loss was a very big event for all of us here because he has so much aloha for everyone.
Yes, he's a legend.
Yeah, and then I was actually, you know that your nephew, Lee Harvey Haumea.
You were there to help him too.
He is like big
and
part
thank
of
you
my
very
heart.
Much.
A big part of my heart. I am so very, very sorry that he's left us at the young age of 31.
Yeah.
And I was acknowledging how many aunties and uncles that loved him and celebrated him, and I mentioned all of his eight brothers and sisters by
Thank
name.
Thank you.
Yeah, and letting people know that at Waipa on Saturday, January 18th,
yes.
We're going to celebrate his life there, and your mother is leaving tomorrow to go help out there in California, and this Saturday the service will be at Kapo Church. I have to look one. I think Kapo Mission Church, Kapo Beach Church. And I want to acknowledge your wonderful nephew Keone, who is a brother every family should have, you know, always opening his heart and his home to his brothers and sisters and relatives in California. He's an oasis over there, and he's got his, what's his business called? 808 Hawaii. He's got a really great food service over there that
right.
helps to keep
the Hawaiian tradition going.
Yep, for the people over there.
Yeah, and my mom is leaving tomorrow.
Your mom is leaving tomorrow, and so, Auntie Lady, we love you, and she's another person who takes really good care of the community, and I actually brag about her regularly to people who visit, because she's got to be close to 80 years old, and she's a gnarly bouncer right
yeah,
there at Tahiti Nui. Yeah, you know, she can handle, and both her and her sisters, oh my goodness, you know, they prove that, like, you never get old.
Nope, is culture-wise to keep the Hawaiian strong.
Yes, and thank you for what you do with the parks. Do you have anything you want to say to your family?
We all love you guys, and we're in good strength. And bless you guys.
Yes.
And thank you for all the support.
Okay, and love to all of you. I hear the voices in the background. I think I know who they are. Love, 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 love to all of you. You guys all make an amazing difference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Aloha, Felicia.
Aloha. KKCR, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Joey calling in.
Hi, Joey.
Hi. I just wanted to, I haven't caught in your whole show, but I didn't know if anybody called in about the march on Oahu and Hauʻiwa.
No, they haven't. And why don't you share about that?
Well, I flew over in the morning and drove out to the North Shore, and it was a really hard drive because it was raining so hard that you couldn't see anywhere. And I know Hauʻiwa fairly well, but I couldn't even find the park. It was raining. It was so raining so hard. I can't believe it. So anyway, I finally made it to the 7-Eleven is where it started, and at 11:30 or 11:15, it was only like 10 people there, and Dustin's texting me, how many people are there? And I'm saying 10. And anyway, by 12 o'clock, there was like at least 700 people there. And by the time we were ready to march, and we actually did march, I would say there was at least 1,000, maybe 1,200 it seemed like to me I didn't count. It was a really good showing. A lot of the pro surfer guys showed up. They didn't necessarily stay when we made it to the park for very long. And there was a lot of support within Haleiwa Town itself. Everyone was hanging out at their little shop doors and waving. And the police actually were going to pull the permit and because of the weather. But somehow we marched anyway. And I know that there's a... it's in Hawaiian law, and I'm sorry I'm not familiar with that Hawaiian law. But it's this lovely Hawaiian gal there that knew Hawaiian law and was able to give the police the right wordage to be able to let them know that we were actually going to march.
Okay. I watched it live, and I didn't get to see that. At the end of the march, she did explain it on live on, you know, the live stream.
Right, right, cool.
But yeah, so it did seem like a big rain, and then I did not understand that that was why they were pulling the permit. So it was pretty disturbing to see that they pulled the permit, and it looked like, well, people just marched anyway. But,
yeah, yeah.
But, and then even used two lanes instead of one lane.
Yeah,
I did see many comments that there would have been more people there, but they were blocked from being able to come.
Yeah, I know. A friend of mine, there was a lot of people that probably would have come. You know, the rain was probably worse than the rain that we had in Poipu the time that we marched in March.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was raining hard here, too.
Yeah, yeah, it was heavy. But for it being that rainy, we had a really good turnout. And, you know, it was really amazing. Gary Hooser showed up, and he spoke so eloquently, as well as Walter Riddy. And, you know, Gary talked about the importance of Bill 2491 and that it's a step in the right direction is what it is. It's a step in the right direction. It isn't, you know, the answer. And then Walter Riddy made an amazing point, which is we all really need to vote. I'll be a voter registrar again this year. I tell you, it is so important. We need to get people in the legislature, in our government, that are really going to represent the people. And I do feel that Tulsi Gabbard is on the right track. She's one person that I recognize is actually on the right track, except for she wasn't at our rally. Daryl Hannah was. She flew in from wherever she was, California, I think. And another person that was really amazing that we need to really support is our island of Maui, our sister island of Maui, Ellie Cochran, who I've known for quite some time. She's married to a longtime surfer shaper, Wayno Cochran. Anyway, she helped save Honolulu Bay. They wanted to develop and shut it down so the surfers couldn't go to Honolulu Bay and surf as freely as we have been all these years. And it was really, she was a driving force behind it, and then she decided to run for county council because she wanted to make a difference. And she does. She really makes a difference. And she put together a bill, and I'm not that familiar with what the bill is. It's similar to Bill 2491. I know that she had talked to Gary and got some information on how he went about it. But, you know, maybe we can find out more what their bill is on
yes.
our own. But we need to support her because Monsanto is doing that behind-the-scene deals with their mayor, is what she explained. And she was so passionate, she even broke down in tears because, you know, Monsanto's trying to get in the door, and their mayor is selling out and going with Monsanto and doing backroom deals. And it just seems so crooked and shameful to me that mayor would be...
Well, I saw that he did set up a voluntary element that was done with Monsanto, and so we will be challenged to see how well the voluntary element that the state has said for Kauai's biotech industry to be revealing their pesticide use, and hopefully they will actually come through with that. They're in their 30-day window of showing how well that the voluntary elements work. I want to acknowledge that you are Dustin's mother, because you must be very proud of both your sons. But Dustin has really made a big difference, and he got the Surfer's
Agent
of Change for Surfer Magazine. And who's listening on the line right now is some of the whole Tai Hook, Haumea family, Ham Young over in California. So they're on the air listening with us right now. And I noticed that Dustin, the day that Uncle Bobo passed away, actually tattooed his name on his leg.
Yeah, he did. He did. He's got a number of close people in his life that he tattooed on his leg with a little angel. And
yes, there was four I saw there.
Yeah, Kyle Malosky, Andy Irons, Ronnie Boy, a friend of his from the South Side, and Bobo Ham Young. Mm.
And Bobo has been, you know, really a great kind of parent to people in the community, just like Auntie Lady Ham Young and Auntie Kathy Ham Young have also helped to raise up this community. So
mm-hmm.
I see more people from California have just come on. Now I can see who all's on the air, so I can tell that they're wanting a little bit of love, and we do send our love out to you, Haumea family.
Yes,
and
we sure do. I mean, I knew Lee Haumea from him being in school with Dustin and Nikolai at Hanalei Elementary, and he was such a lovely young person. I mean, I haven't seen him in years, but my heart goes out to the Haumea family, and I send them deep respect and love.
I've known him pretty much since he was riding in the grocery cart, you know, little boy, and for about 7 or 8 years of his life, I was talking to him at least once or twice a week. So I am particularly saddened by this, Misty. Kayoni, girls, we love you, and thank you so much for taking care of your brother. And so, Joey, thank you so much for
and
your call-in.
Uh-huh. One last thing in closing. I'd really hope that people can maybe contact Ellie Cochran or you know, and send their support to her for what she's doing on Maui. She really needs our help. If you just Google her name, Ellie Cochran, I believe it's Cochran, Maui Councilwoman. You know, she really needs our help in signing petitions and you know, helping them with their difficulties that they're having with Monsanto.
Okay, and I want to make a comment here, and I have Larry Schneider who did just walk in. Hi, Larry. Were you over on Oahu with all these folks?
No,
okay.
I wasn't.
Okay, I was sitting there. I saw quite a lot of Kauai folks, actually, on the live stream. I was like, wow, we represented. That made me feel good because all the different sister islands have been helping each other on this.
Yeah.
I think in this past year, since the Public Land Development Corporation issue came up, and which the Public Land Development Corporation really brought the spotlight onto the GMO issue, a genetically modified organism issue, because really the Agribusiness Development Corporation is almost like Exhibit A of why not to have the Public Land Development Corporation, because it definitely favored one industry heavily and biased against the small, struggling, local farmer hopeful, right? It's
yeah.
easier to do business with big business, and so when we see something like the Public Land Development Corporation be really easy to be working with these global corporations, when we have something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership
mm-hmm.
that really wants to take that up one more step, I think what's worked and why we've had the successes that we have had is for like as a first time, really, we've had all these islands coming together. Certainly Maui, Molokai, Hawaii, and Oahu have been coming over here to Kauai, really offering support. Every island has all been holding hands.
Right, right. And actually, Lori Lonitorio, Christy DeMuth, amongst many others that were on the plane with me going over, the gals from Molokai, Mercy Riddy, and Uncle Walter, his wife, and their sons. I mean, there was so many people that came from Maui as well. Ann Evans, my daughter Gina Barca, and just to name a few. You know, I mean, it was fabulous that we are all helping one another and that we care, and we should, because you know, communities really need to be communities. What I'm trying to say is, sometimes when we get too big, we lose touch with our politicians, our people in office. And that's what happened all over America. you know, where it seems like politics is out of control, and people don't have a say because their politicians aren't really voicing the concerns of the citizens, you know, to whomever they talk to, you know, amongst themselves. But
well, people are standing up, and they're standing together, and I think it's having more impact than these individuals anticipate, and it has, to use the word from the industry, I'm not using the military word, the industry did, blowback, you know. They say no to a simple request, then the next demand is harder, the next demand is harder, and I think that it's a lot easier to just communicate with everybody than it is to simply push things down folks' throat. And
yeah.
So I think they're learning that. They're learning it a little bit slowly. It's a lot of work to do it. But thank you so much. Anything else?
But yeah, one last thing. On the news at 10 o'clock, which I didn't, my flight was delayed, so I got in really late, but Pat recorded it for me. Alicia Molefetiti,
the spokesperson for the other
she
side.
She has such negative things to say. She always, and they give her so much airtime. Like, oh, here they're at it again, you know, and she just, she just makes us sound like our voices don't matter, but they do, and we're going to show her, because I'm really, she's just such a negative person when it comes to, that she doesn't even listen to what we have to say. You know, I feel like I often listen to what the other side has to say. In fact, I know you've done field trips and gone to Syngenta, I think it was, you said, and
Dow.
Dow,
and
okay.
They were very nice, very,
yeah.
Very nice.
But it's like, so we're open-minded. They feel like the other side isn't very open-minded. They're not really feeling our concerns. When we have Dr. Don Huber and others that are so well-educated, you know, in science, telling us that this is not a good thing. This is, you know, really bad for our health and for the oceans, for the rivers, you know, for the earth. You know, so anyway, it's really hard when the other side.
But in fairness, when we say they, because I do reach to that side, they aren't all one people. There is a whole range of level of open-heartedness.
The CEOs, and then there's the workers, and, you know, middle management. I know.
They're not all the same. And they, you know, I mean, I will say this. One thing that sounds like I'm defending them, but I will say this, that I feel like I've really been able to experience this true, mm-hmm. is that they don't believe that they are harming us. They
right.
are in these cornfields all the time, every day. They're breathing it. They're in their own breeding cycle. They wouldn't be doing it if they thought that this was so toxic. So they put themselves right in harm's way. So
right.
So I do try and at least allow them that respect, because they believe they're doing
for themselves. It would be nice for themselves, the workers. If they, I don't know if any of them went to listen to Don Huber speak when he spoke, you know.
There were a few, but not many.
Okay. Well, anyway, Felicia, I don't want to take up too much time. Thank you so much for all the good work that you do, and I hope I see you soon.
Okay, I appreciate you so much.
Hey,
ahui ho. Ahui ho. Larry, hi. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, the listeners was even hearing. I was saying, somebody come in here with me. So, great, and you have lots of mana'o on a lot of things.
One of the things I was going to say is, in the last conversation, I think one of the problems is when, for example, both of you were speaking and you said they, it's too easy to clump too many groups together.
Right.
And when you were saying they, I think you were referring to the workers. And
no,
I
wasn't. I was actually referring to all of them and actually people at the top of the pile that's on the island here, because that's who I deal with more.
You don't think that some of the people at the top
that are here
know exactly what's going on and that there is some toxicity and there's problems?
I might be really naive, but what I believe is they believe if they follow the label that it's not going to be doing the damage. They know that it's highly toxic, but they do believe the label. And so they think, okay, well, we're spraying it here, not 500 feet over there, so we're hurting here, not there. I mean, they really are in the fields, and would they spend 30 years of their life dedicated to hurting humanity for some money?
No, not that they, not that group of they. But I do think there are some that theys, and I think a lot of the people heard them. And one of the problems that I think polarizes the population is when some of the people in the they group are opinion leaders. Maybe they're corporate counsel or
yes.
Or a business person.
Or
who,
a spokesperson like Alicia Malafudi.
Who knows that, I think the last caller was correct in that, correct in some regards that they don't listen, but I think they listen very carefully to what's being said. And that individual or a few of the individuals who are opinion leaders for many then create a counterpoint just to be argumentative rather than to be objective and look at the facts. But the overwhelming majority, I agree with you because I spent time at the companies, overwhelming majority of the people involved believe that the practices are safe.
Yeah, I think that piece of they that maybe then you're talking about is what I consider the spin doctors. And I would say that some people are maybe defensive, and I have to say even on our side of the issue, I've heard things being overstated.
Oh, no question.
And I'm just claiming my bias to the listener when I say our side. I have grown over the course of a two-year period of time of having listeners call me and ask me to go to all these different meetings. I've gone from, I don't want to say indifferent, but choosing not to be interested to having a rather strong opinion because I've gone to all these different meetings and I've listened to the science on both sides. And so I have drawn my conclusion that it can't be healthy.
But that's a fundamental different pathway than someone who takes a position that I'm paid to discredit a certain viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And universally, it happens universally that one or two people are paid to discredit opinions and they get airtime. Why do they get airtime? Because it's a commercial. They're paying to get on the air to give their opinion.
That's the spin doctors.
Yeah, the spin doctors. But the difference with your opinion and a lot of the people is I think it's a process that you take in you take in information, you try to analyze it, and you come to a conclusion. That's fundamentally different than someone who's rigid. You can be rigid in your opinions and mean it from the heart, but then that's okay. I respect that. But when you do it because you're paid to defend a viewpoint, regardless of the consequences, that I don't think that's a respectable position to have.
That's right. And I do think, though, that like I know I have been wrong in the past about things that, you know, if I wind the clock back 15 years, opinions I held strongly then, I really believed them to be true. And now I have more information and I no longer believe them to be true. But I was a good person then that didn't have the right information. We have another caller on the air.
You're pretty good, Felicia. All I have to do is rewind the clock about 5 minutes
well,
and realize that some of the opinions I had last hour were wrong.
I mean, I can look at yesterday, too. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia. Hi, my name's Dave. I live in Kekaha. I'm an organic home gardener.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm listening to the discussion about, I know you like to listen to both sides of the issue of the use of pesticides and is it safe, and I read the label and all that. But, you know, the real core of the use of pesticides has to do with killing the soil food web.
Yes, you know, and the micro herd.
Yeah, and that, you don't have, I mean, it's really clear. I mean, that's the main reason I'm against it, and I'm even against using chemical fertilizers. That's a salt. It actually kills the soil food web. So, I mean, that's really the essence of why we shouldn't use pesticides.
I agree. I mean, I think that, like, when you kill what I call the microherd, that's the mycelium, the worms,
exactly,
and the microbe.
Exactly.
But do you believe that the people who are applying that or who are paying people to apply it, do you think that they grasp at their core what they're actually doing? Do you think they understand?
I don't think they really care, though, because they're so into the chemical. I mean, the chemistry, and what's fascinating about the soil food web, but to bring an example of what you're saying, is that the organic organisms, the humus, actually converts from an organic form to an inorganic form so the plant can take it up,
yes.
Which is why all those fertilizers work, but it kills everything else, and the excess goes into the watershed. So anyway, it's really, really clear, and that's all I wanted to make. And I just, that bell ran off in my head, it made so much sense about organic gardening.
It's really, really clear that that's not the best practice to poison
right.
the land. Is that what you're saying is really, really clear?
And it's really, really simple. Yeah, that's very, very simple when you think about adding amendments and things to the soil and organic matter and humus and all the other special stuff. It's beautiful. That's all I wanted to say, and I know you folks are already aware of that, but I just wanted to bring it up.
Okay,
you know?
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
But in defense of the they for commercial agriculture, I think it's within their standard beliefs that you can eradicate and then replenish. And so I think that you can go, I think, and I don't know because I don't live in their, I don't walk in their shoes, but I would think that they're thinking, well, we're going to do this and spray this, but we're going to replenish. And I just, sometimes I wonder, I think a large group of the people that work in that industry don't realize, don't think about what Dave was just speaking of to create a self-sustainable ecosystem. But that, again, that's a difference in perspective versus what we were talking before in terms of a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist
right,
who pays politicians, who pays
a paid
newspapers.
Lobbyist is a different person than somebody who it's, you know, feels who believes what they've been told from the lobbyists, right? You know, or by the industry, you work within the industry and you're going to feel that just like those of us on the outside of the industry. Maybe very quickly believe something that supports a viewpoint that we already have. We have another caller. I'm going to bring them up. You're on the air. Oops. I guess I didn't pull them up right, so they can call right back if they want. What to me is very important, I would like to see, is pressure now in December. I know for myself, I will certainly be speaking to the legislators about what is so important, because my concern is that there's going to be an end run around these counties' efforts, and that the state will say, well, we're taking all the power away from the counties. They tried very, very hard to do that last year. We had a collective temper tantrum, fit, demonstration, whatever it took to say, no, 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 please don't vote away these rights. But I think if it wasn't for unprecedented amounts or huge amounts, maybe it's precedented, but huge amounts of public feedback, we would have lost all the power in the counties to control it. And what I learned last year is that on the opening day of the legislature, there's like about 3,000 bills that are put before them. Everything comes out on day one. Then they go through this big screening process of cutting them back. And so maybe 1,000 will actually get scheduled. If you do the math on that, there is 90 days of work for those people. So they're doing like 10 bills a day, sort of. It is an overwhelming amount of bills that they're having to push out. It spreads out over about 4 months, but it's a marathon. And just being somebody following it, it's relentless time all day long in your kitchen on your computer trying to watch how these bills make it through the process, because you can have something that says all dogs have to be on a leash, and that the leash log for the dog could end up being no dogs are allowed on a leash, or it's a crime to put your dog on the leash. I mean, it can start with one intention and flip 180 degrees to be the opposite when it's voted into law on the very last day. So it is a huge game that people are playing, and working with. And so right now, we're in that 11th hour of needing to make sure that our legislators, number one, aren't going to give away our home rule, and number two, are being proactive to be putting bills forward to preserve it. And it's a discussion that needs to be happening aggressively, in my opinion.
This statement may sound bizarre in the sense that I hope that they read and understand the bills that they're voting on. And remember a couple months ago.
And it's very, in all fairness to them, it's gnarly to be able to do that.
You can't. It's purposely too hard. They purposely construct it so that you can't get through it. If there's 1,000 bills in 90 days, do the math, and then a bill's 240 pages. Remember a month or so ago I read you the Monsanto Protection Plan, which was one paragraph. It was one sentence, and it was incomprehensible to anyone except attorneys, and even attorneys would have different opinions. And so one of the problems is we put this responsibility and faith into our representatives to do the right thing, and the way that government has become as a corporate democracy, they're passing and considering legislation that the truth is they can't read or understand.
And it's very hard. I think it's worse at the federal level than at the state level. But when we look at those 1,000 bills maybe that are deemed have value, to make them more manageable, a lot of times they get all coupled together. And sometimes there's a reason to couple them together, because when everything's fragmented apart, one plan in a traffic, one modality in a traffic plan isn't good if it's not placed in consideration of the bus systems and the cars and the rails. You know, they all kind of have to go together in one big package transportation plan, conceivably, to make it work. I've had two people sending me this information, and I'm just going to read it. It's getting texted to me, but this is second person who's wanted me to say this, and I wish people would just call it in so I don't have to do this. But this is a notice from the Department of Defense, the Department of Army Corps of Engineers. It's called 33CFR Part 334. It's a real document. Pacific Ocean off the Pacific Missile Range facility at Barking Sands, Island of Kauai, Hawaii, danger zone. Okay, so this is the agency's position, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Final rule. This is an action. Final rule. The summary is the Corps of Engineers is amending its regulations for the danger zone in waters of the Pacific off the Pacific Missile Range facility at Barking Sands, Hawaii. The Navy conducts weapons systems testing and other military testing and training activities at the Pacific Missile Range facility. The amendment expands the boundaries of the existing danger zone to include an area necessary to protect the public from potential hazards associated with weapons system testing, other military testing, and tracking activities and increased threat conditions. Similar to the original danger zone, the expanded danger zone prohibits any activity by the public. It's coming up in a bunch of little. Okay, I didn't. That's where it ended right here. It'll come in a minute. But so they've just. That was an issue that was coming out, and people have been concerned about it, about whether they are going to expand the missile range facility, and they apparently did just decide that, yes, in fact, they're going to do it. And that's another example of encroachment of freedoms. Have you followed that at all? Do you know what that's about?
A bit, but I'm probably a typical citizen. We probably won't know what it's about in specifics or detail.
Well, the people on the west side get it because it's where they can or can't go.
Well, but it my guess is it's not a coincidence that it comes at the time that one of the governmental leaders was executed by taking a sledgehammer to his head in North Korea last week.
I didn't hear about that. Who was
Sun Jin Il's brother was executed when the Sun took over, and he was found to be a traitor to the government, and they killed him by smashing his skull with a sledgehammer. So I'm sure that it's an opportune time, whether the threat is real or perceived, that maybe the government in North Korea is unstable.
Oh, okay. I was trying to put those two together. All right, so they don't trust Korea. I mean, but haven't
well,
we had a problem
be,
with them for a long time?
Correct, but I'm saying the timing's impeccable when an event occurs, and then all of a sudden there's a necessity to do testing on the westernmost side of the United States.
Well, they've been
be justified
they've
pretty
been
easily.
Threatening to expand this range. I got a caller on the line. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia, this is Lynn. If you're going to start talking about West Side, can we talk about Niihau?
Sure.
And the whole push that's going on to withdraw all the waters around Niihau from any public access whatsoever and grant the rights of control over those public waters to the Robinson family on Niihau. It's being done under the guise of protecting resources for Niihauans.
Yes, I've seen that. Uh-huh.
But I'd like to point out that the amount, the distance that they're asking for from the coast is exactly what's required for them to continue to have black ops take place on Niihau, which is where covert operations are practiced.
On the island or in the water?
Both.
Wow.
And if you look at a map, bathymetric map, I've been sitting with the fishers about this, and they feeling, and I think quite rightly, many of them, that they're getting the total blame for all the increased activity out there at Niihau. And, you know, at the same time, if you go out in a boat to Niihau, you'll see people on jet skis brought over there by charter boats that don't seem to have a charter license, and surfers going out there, people just, you know, we're dealing with a generation of people perhaps who really don't understand the need for keeping those resources for the people of Niihau and Kauai as a shared family ohana kind of resource.
Right.
But what concerns me the most is this relentless effort to get this water closed off. And that's the part I'm really objecting to, is because I'm not against conservation, and if you go to a meeting with these fishers, neither are they. And if you look at ecosystems in the county of Kauai, the Kauai Island itself, the way the bathymetry works, the way the winds work, the way the currents work, the richness of Niihau is co-joined with the resources that come to it from Kauai. So taking out Niihau and plunking it out is like going to the dentist, taking out your tooth and giving it to him to fix, and he fixes it supposedly, but you can't put your tooth back in because it's dead. You know?
So
there's been this approach. It's been going on for years, and every time there's a new opportunity, the Robinson family has chosen to take a new tactic to try and get control over the public waters. And the thing is that it's a bad precedent from the point of view that a private landowner would have complete control over public resource, which is held in trust by DLNR for the people of Hawaii. And it's also a little troubling to me and to some of the Hawaiians I've talked to that this is, they're getting this by pretending that it's a right or a privilege being given to one group of Hawaiians over another. And there's some discussion about how many people really live on Niihau. And at the meeting I was at yesterday, someone who just returned from a funeral or a celebration sometime with Niihauans said that there are currently 37 people living full-time on Niihau. So this seems like an overreaction, unless you think of it as being a way to get exclusive access to something. And then given that, and given the fact that Kauai's ecosystem is so conjoined with Niihau's ecosystem, and this whole area is a nexus of exchange between the Northern Hawaiian Islands and the main Hawaiian Islands, so we look at what's the health of the Kauai side like. Well, a lot of it is damaged, and it's not entirely overfishing. a lot of it is damaged because there's no more water coming down, and what is coming down is polluted or very sediment-laden.
And caller, I think it's a fisherman on another line who'd like to come on at the same time. Are you all right with that?
Sure.
Okay.
So what I was going to say, though, is to finish saying it, is let us look at who some of the people are who are leasing the land on the side on Kauai, the land that's causing the problems on the Kauai side, and it's Gay and Robinson. So why would this be your first choice of a group of people who you would want to give sole control of all the public waters around Niihau? I'm just having a really hard time with this.
It's a strong point. I'm going to bring the other caller on. Okay. Are you both on at the same time now, caller?
I am.
Okay. What's your feedback?
My feedback is, well, I'm not a fisherman.
Okay.
But there's a couple of things. One is with your very last statement was the fact that the Robinsons want to control the water. The Robinsons control so much of the GMO products or GMO crop land here that is absolutely ridiculous. The fact that the Robinsons want to help anybody, I think, is asinine. The fact that the Robinsons, when I first moved here over 20 years ago, and I thought that, hey, they own Niihau, they're giving the Niihau people, that's the native Hawaiian people, they're doing a really good job. That's really cool of them to give the whole island to the natives. But the thing is that what happens when there's somebody born? When somebody is born on Niihau, unless they marry one of their cousins or brothers or sisters, they're not allowed to stay. So what the Robinsons are doing is taking away the people's land one generation at a time.
Well, it's not even their land because it's not owned by them. They can be kicked off at any time because they're tenants.
You mean
from what I heard is that the Robinsons bought the land for $100,000 and a piano.
Well, that was generations ago.
Right. But they still own the land and they still protect the land. The Robinsons own Niihau. Am I wrong?
Yes, they own Niihau, but the people who live there do not own the land that they live on.
The whole
right, place. But the Robinsons own the land, and the Robinsons, and nobody is allowed to go there because of the Robinsons. The Robinsons say, if you want to stay here, if you want to be here, you have to be 100% pure Hawaiian. But if you put 100 people that are related on an island, it's ridiculous to think that they're going to be able to stay. They won't be able to stay because they're going to marry and leave in order for them to get married to somebody who's not of their own family.
Since you've been here for a while, you've heard about some of the things that they've done out there on that island in the past to try and bring some income to themselves. They're cash poor, and what they've done in the past is bring over African animals, for instance, such as the eland, and they also have quite a bit of cattle there. And when I was trying to dig out data, which is one of my points there. Is no data on the fishing on either side, the conditions on either side. This is a completely emotional decision that's being done based on he said, she said evidence at this point in time. And the consequences for the ecosystem, they really could be very heavy. And with this is at the same time, I mean, the push to get this into the sanctuary is also part of this, because once in the sanctuary, all military activity can take place. It's exempted.
So, caller, I have a question for you, female caller. With this, do you know anything about the expansion of the danger zone on the military range? I know on a different show I've had a recording of Keith Robinson speaking about how the Strait of Niihau is very similar to the Straits of Hormuz, and so that the military wants to do testing for possible interactions with Iran. Do you know if this danger zone, does it get all the way out to Niihau?
It does. As far as I know, it does not extend all the way out. It extends, it's more of, this has actually been going on for over a year.
Yeah.
It has more to do with the kinds of weapons that they're going to change start using, which is in the environmental impact statement for PMRF, it requires that they have a wider zone for the danger. And they're also, like, working on larger rockets and things now, so they need to have a larger zone for the danger. And they swear that it's not going to be any more activity where they are. It's just to accommodate the change in the kind of weapons and rockets that they're using.
So, it's all a farce. That is all the fact that we need the Pacific Missile Range to defend us is ridiculous. There is no way another country can fire a missile on America. There's no way. Do you remember when North Korea sent off those two warheads up over the Pacific?
Both of them just exploded miraculously in midair.
That's assuming that the rocket's going to come from a stationary object on land. You certainly could bring a submarine into land and shoot nuclear missiles from a submarine.
You can't do that. You cannot do that. Oh, we have in Afghanistan and in Iraq, we have lasers that mount onto the Humvees. Those lasers will detect a mortar shell. I don't know if you know what a mortar shell looks like. It's about maybe 8 inches long by about 4 inches wide, and it comes off of a tube. It blows up over. The laser detects the mortar and will blow it up.
How does the United States get casualties if every weapon that is used against us is...
I'm not saying every weapon used against us is obsolete because of our technology. I'm saying that missiles, mortars, anything of a size, we have defenses against them.
Okay.
You know, maybe if you came and invaded our country, then that would be a different thing. It would be hand-to-hand combat.
Okay, thank you, caller. I have both of you guys on where your voices are different modulation, and we're almost time to go. You both have brought up really good points. I'm going to have to let this go now, okay?
Aloha.
Aloha.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that is very important points that they're bringing up. For me, it is totally outside of my expertise to know what any of these militaries are really capable of. So I don't know, but it does sound like a very important issue, and that, again, it comes down to, are we being told the accurate story?
Well, if you have a contained, in a simplistic model, if you had a swimming pool, and on one side of the swimming pool you would say that you're going to protect the waters, and on the other side you're going to put things in the water that'll create waves and issues, the effect, I think, would be throughout the entire body of water. So my guess, and I don't know, and I'm not defending or speaking with knowledge about what the real intention is, but I would think that if the military is going to do exercises, whether justified or not, that it's just to get to diminish liability. They wouldn't want anyone in the water if they're going to be putting rockets that are different, going different lengths. So,
right. At some level, I'm glad that they are warning and saying we don't want people in the line of fire. So thank you, Larry, for coming in. The History of Jazz with Kirk is up next. And
the present of jazz, too.
And the present of jazz, because the present of jazz is right here in the studio with us, because Kirk Smart is a fine, fine musician. Oh, Noel Jukes is coming in, too. That is the grandfather of the famous Eli Smart. Noel Jukes' main claim to fame is being the grandfather of Eli Smart.
What band is Eli Smart in?
He's with OCDC.
That's a pretty good band, isn't it?
It's a really good band, and he is 14 years old. And
Who else is in that band?
Well, somebody I love very much, my son. So that's a shameless plug for our children. So I am going to let the listener fade out with Ben Harper.